This is a Roundtable Rewind.
Just after 6 o'clock, here we go live on a Monday, and a lot to get to today. Jim Dunaway, Lance Taylor, Ryan Brown. Rockstar off this week, his Thanksgiving holiday. He'll be back with us a week from Monday. That means Big D's behind the big glass doing everything and juggling knives back there this morning, including answering your phone calls, 834-945-0800-239-WJOX. Callers already standing by because it's Iron Bowl week. We'll get to Auburn and Alabama and all of college football coming up. But as you occasionally do on busy weekends, you get some news items dumped out that you don't really want to be talked about 24/7, 365, and Auburn basketball got something out yesterday that was big news. So we'll start there, work through the NFL, and get to college football. Guys, Auburn basketball self-imposing a postseason ban this year. Your initial reaction when you heard that in the middle of the NFL Sunday?
Well, I was a little surprised. I mean, the story dropped to timestamp it. It was right at halftime of the Dolphins-Broncos game. I'm just sitting there stewing about my Dolphins, the way they played the first half, and boom, Kirk Sampson of Auburn sends out the email. I'm like, holy crap. You know, this came on the heels of Alabama getting 3 years probation, and then boom, here's Auburn announcing a postseason ban. I mean, all in the span of about 48 hours, both the major SEC programs in this state have announced, you know, some sort of NCAA sanctions, but Auburn's is a little more serious because it carries with it a postseason ban, though who even knows what that means in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, really, who does know what it means, Dunaway? But, I mean, this goes back to 2017 and all of the allegations regarding assistant coach Chuck Person, former Auburn great. And it's just – it's amazing that it's drug out this long. And I question the timing. But the other interesting thing is college basketball, man, it seems like every other program is in some kind of – having some sort of difficulty with the NCAA right now.
Yeah, I can't remember how long this has been going on, the NCAA probe from that FBI investigation and everything. But we know they're still in the SEC. Alabama had theirs, their NCAA case wrapped up. This is a self-imposed thing with Auburn. So eventually the NCAA will either accept these penalties or hand down more, and Auburn's case will be over with. But we all know what's still out there, and that's the quote, damn great offer, damn solid offer from LSU. And eventually the NCAA's got to get to that, right? That's still the big elephant in the room.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think with these last two that have happened. So Alabama's gets closed. Auburn's at least starts down the road of some sort of closure. At some point, LSU has to start down that same road, right?
Maybe. I mean, who knows? Dunaway, I thought this thing was done, though, because did Auburn not – I thought they had self-imposed recruiting restrictions, you know, a couple of years ago for
this. They did. Yeah, they did. And it still may not be done. I mean, the NCAA – I would have to think Auburn has some sort of idea they're at least close to what the NCAA would accept. It's kind of dumb to do it just blindly, right? Auburn wouldn't have just said – hey, you know, let's do a 1 year postseason ban, and let's just see if they like that. I mean, you know, it's got to be something they've at least run up the flagpole with the NCAA, and the NCAA either says, you're close or whatever. I don't know. It may not be all for Auburn. It could be more. Who knows?
You know, the last time we saw Auburn in the NCAA tournament, they were in the Final Four.
That's yeah, right. Forever ago.
That was the last NCAA tournament. They didn't have one last year. And Bruce Pearl touched on that yesterday. It's sort of a two-year with COVID. Yeah. And now this, that's a two-year ban. He's hinting there, Brown, because major violations oftentimes can come with a two-year postseason ban. So now, you know, Bruce is out there explaining that, look, we lost a postseason last year because of COVID. Now for these guys, we're self-imposing this one. So when they start to make their final ruling, he wants it on the record right there that, listen, we have missed two postseason tournaments now.
And I don't think that will fly with the NCAA, but it did feel like that's kind of the play Auburn was making there, didn't it? That, okay, we're going to self-impose a one, but it's really a two if you consider we missed a tournament in 2020. So it, you know, you wonder if maybe Auburn felt like two was the way to go, so they're going to try this. And worst case scenario, the NCAA comes back and adds one more. But maybe you get away with this. Maybe the NCAA buys it and says, okay, yeah, that really was a two.
Now, is this something the administration talks with Bruce Pearl? Hey, look, man, I don't think we're going to make the NCAA tournament anyway. Like, I don't know about you guys.
Well, they were a bubble team. Yeah.
I don't know what the expectation was. I mean, I fully expected them to get better and better as the season went on and find their way to get into the NCAA tournament. But, I mean, the expectation wasn't big for this Auburn team.
Like, Dunaway, I have been told, and I don't know this factually, I don't know that anybody's announced this. It could have been announced and I just missed it. But I have been told, you know, Georgia Tech did a postseason ban last year, which may go down as one of the greatest NCAA moves of all time. And I have been told that the NCAA will honor that ban. The NCAA...
Yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech didn't realize that we were going to hit, a pandemic was going to hit and shut down the tournament.
But,
remember
when they did that, Brown, what did we say instantly? They're not going to make the tournament anyway.
Exactly.
Why does it matter?
Yeah, man, and it turns out there was no tournament. So it turns out it was great timing for Georgia Tech. And if you're Auburn, you know, this is a roll of the dice, perhaps, where you say, we've got a borderline team anyway. I mean, this is a bubble team probably. They're picked seventh in the SEC. And who knows, A, if there's a tournament, and B, if there is it even a legitimate tournament? Does it even feel right? I mean, who knows? So why not do it this year? I mean, from that aspect, it is the best year you could possibly do this.
Yeah, 100% on that, because they were projected middle of the pack. And now any Auburn fan will tell you the year they went to the Final Four, I think they also were projected in the middle of the pack. That does seem to be the way things go occasionally for Auburn Athletics. Some of their best years have been when the expectations have been pretty modest at best. Sharif Cooper is a big player whose eligibility is still a little bit up in the air. They've got a big recruit in Jabari Smith. It'll be interesting to see how those five-star guys react to this news that comes down yesterday, because as we've seen in the past, when your program, whether it's football or basketball, has some sanctions or some self-imposed penalties, it opens up the door for some stars to leave or not to be as engaged with the program as you would hope they would be, or end up being on campus at all. So that'll be something to watch coming up in the next few days. So that is a big story, because Auburn had turned into a Final Four type basketball program, and they self-imposed themselves a postseason ban to start off the year. People like Pat Forty and those that cover basketball on a regular basis with some scathing articles yesterday. Pat saying he expects Auburn to be hammered down the road from the NCAA, that this is only the tip of the iceberg, something Pat's been calling for a couple of years now. So we'll see if it gets closer and closer to what Pat has been writing about for a few years. A big day in the NFL. We'll get to all of that. Also, college football wraps up. It is Iron Bowl week. A lot of callers standing by off the bat, so let's rock a couple of those. Jonathan in Mount Olive is up first. Jonathan, thanks for being with us. You're on with LT and D&B. Go ahead, man.
Yes, sir. My question is, what do you think Auburn's best chance of winning Saturday is? And if they happen to lose, do you think Gus Malzahn will be fired?
All right. Iron Bowl question number one. Guys, go.
The second half of that question is no. He will not get fired with a loss to Alabama.
Yeah, even if he loses by 35. I mean, this number, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit, is a massive number out of Las Vegas. Dunaway, for Auburn to win this game, Bo Nix is going to have a career game. And I kind of heard Greg McElroy on the broadcast this past Saturday night say as much. And on the other side, you know, I would think that Mac Jones would have to throw a couple of pick sixes. We saw that last year.
Yeah. You know, that question, Dunaway, when I was doing the zone last night on 3340, it came up. And I said the same thing Lance just said, is you might need the Smoke Monday type play that they got Saturday night against Tennessee that turned that game. The same type of play you got at Jordan-Hare. Maybe a couple pick sixes off of Mac Jones. And I said, you know, the weird thing about that is those things normally happen at Jordan-Hare, so maybe Auburn's best chance of winning this game is getting a move to Jordan-Hare.
Look, this is
that might be the best path.
Dunaway, special rivalry. I don't see a path to victory for Auburn, especially the way Eric Gray was able to carve up that defense. I mean, can you imagine what Najee Harris can
do? Yeah, I mean, Alabama should have plenty of opportunity to run the football.
Yeah, but let's be honest. We didn't think Auburn would beat them last year. Either, right?
Yeah, different situation.
Was because you lost Tua. That made a difference. But here's Bo Nix last year. 15 of 30, 173, one touchdown, no interception.
Auburn gets blown out.
He runs the ball six times for 44 yards. Booby Whitlow ran it for 114.
Yeah, those Bo Nix numbers get Auburn blown out. If that's Tank Bigsby's line, Auburn is, I mean, they're in the game. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a close game. I mean, some of that depends on obviously what Alabama does. With those numbers, I'll say this. With those numbers, Auburn still needed two pick sixes just to win the game, and they would have to have something similar in Bryant Denny, I would say.
Yeah, I think Auburn needs to be plus four in turnovers.
If I put Najee Harris rushing yards at 146.5.
That's a pretty good number.
I would play the over.
I think I'd edge over, yeah. I mean, he's been running very, very well.
He had 146 in the game last year.
Yeah.
If I put Mac Jones.
This is a worse run defense for Auburn, by the way, than it was last year.
Mac Jones passing yards at 335.5.
I think I would play the over, especially Mac Jones coming off 230 against Kentucky.
This blowout, if you're over both those numbers.
Well, look, I mean, there's a reason this number's sitting at 24.5, 25.
Again, that was his number last year. So Mac went 335 last year. Najee went 146 last year. Ruggs with 99. Waddle with 98. Devontae with 80. The offense, they did a lot of the stuff we expect them to do again on Saturday last year, and they found a way to lose the game. A lot of that was two pick sixes from Mac Jones that were taken, as Gus likes to call it, house call over the course of that game. It's happening this weekend, 2:30. You'll hear the game here on Jocks. And, of course, you'll see it on CBS this week. A lot more to get to on that and the National Football League with Bobby downtown. Bobby, you're on with the guys this morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Morning. Two quick questions. One, do you think the SEC office will overturn that targeting call on Arkansas? Because that was not targeting. I'm 58 years old. The guy did everything he could do not to target the guy.
I tweeted out I thought they would, Bobby. Now, when I tweeted that, I don't know if one's ever been overturned. Brown is our SEC historian.
Oh, boy.
Has there ever been a targeting call that we've come back on a Sunday and said, hey, you know, that really wasn't targeting, or we're going to take away the one-game suspension?
I cannot remember, but I will double-check. I don't remember one doing that, but I will double-check.
And very quickly, did y'all watch the end of the Colts game yesterday?
Yes.
Yes. How many holding penalties in a row was that against Indianapolis?
That's what I was wondering. Not only was a clock mismanagement for the Colts bad, but I really were there of maybe six plays where there are four holding calls that are an illegal procedure or a movement.
Yeah.
And I've never seen that at the end of a game, somebody trying to kill a game. Yeah. I just never seen it. Didn't know if you remembered seeing something like that.
Yeah, well, I only caught the last hour of that game, or as it played out, the final 2 minutes and 5 seconds, because it took forever.
I mean, that really went to almost 7 o'clock.
It did. It's incredible how long that game lasted. And that fumble in overtime was big for some, right?
Yeah, it was big for a lot. I can't believe, you know, Aaron Rodgers gets 14-point lead. I just saw this morning, 96-4 in his career. When
but it was such a phony 14-point lead.
It was.
Indianapolis had turned the ball over so much.
And you know, yardage, it wasn't even close. I mean, the Colts dominated that game early on, and they were down 14. It made no sense. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers, for him to complete that pass, to put him in a situation to go to overtime, you know, the 3rd and 10 from his own end zone. I mean, that was amazing that Valdez-Scantling was able to get that open.
Bobby, man, thank you for the good conversation there on those holding penalties. I had never seen anything like that. And some of them, they were having to decline one and take the other because there were two holding penalties on some of those plays. It was a crazy ending.
I was at dinner with the kids watching at one of our sponsors, Fleming's, and boy, I was having to bite my tongue. It was really, really difficult.
Alabama beats Kentucky 63-3. Auburn over Tennessee 30-17. All the SEC actions on the table for you to talk about. But let's get to Ohio State, Indiana as well. That was the biggest game in the country this weekend. And what was a blowout happening 35-7, the Buckeyes got a little shaky down the stretch. That one got interesting. Your big takeaway from Ohio State after seeing them hold on to beat Indiana 42-35.
I didn't think they looked good at all. No. I don't know about you guys. You know, they had that pick six that kind of extended that lead. You know, Indiana early on was giving Justin Fields a lot of problems. And I thought Ohio State's offensive line looked awful.
Well, I think we can safely say nobody's going to have, at least at the top of this thing, is going to have a dominant defense this year, right? Ohio State does not. Alabama does not. I don't think Clemson has a dominant defense that they've had in the past. I think the Notre Dame game showed you that. I don't think Notre Dame does. Florida certainly does not, right? Texas A&M does not. I don't think anybody up there has a dominant defense.
The best of the bunch is Alabama's.
Probably so, but it's far from dominant. So, Dunaway, we can throw dominant defense out now. That's not going to factor into this. So, Ohio State's not going to be in a situation where their defense just wins them a bunch of games. And if Justin Fields makes the same types of decisions against a better team that he made against Indiana, they will lose that game. That he made horrible decisions.
Well, I mean, two things, Dunaway. For Ohio State to go 307 rushing yards, Indiana was -1 when you factor in the sacks. So you outgain them by over 300 yards on the ground. And by the way, you're plus one in turnovers, four Indiana turnovers, and you barely escape that game?
Yeah, I thought Justin Fields looked the way Trevor Lawrence looked at times last year early on in the season. Like he was trying to do too much, really like Mac did, making that one throw downfield. But Justin did it three times. He made three bad mistakes, and you know Mac made one over the weekend. Trask has made a couple throughout the years. The thing that concerned me most in that game was the way Indiana was able to get receivers open against that Ohio State secondary. To me, that secondary, and more importantly, the linebackers in coverage, is what made Ohio State, and you said this last year, Brown, Ohio State looked like a better team than Clemson last year when they lost that game. I thought it was the back seven of their defense that made that defense so elite last year. They don't look to have the same back seven this year as they had last year.
Well, and that's normally been one of the most automatic things in college football, and Klatt pointed that out Saturday. Nobody has put more cornerbacks high in the draft than Ohio State. I mean, it's quarterback U right now, and they just don't have the same edge. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because Chase Young isn't there anymore pressuring the passer. I don't know.
Kuda's gone on one of the corners. I mean, a dominant guy. You don't. Burgess is now in the NFL, one of your starting safeties. I mean, you lost a lot. There was a ton of attrition back there, and they don't look the same. You know,
Penix carved him up, Lance. He carved him up.
I was going to say Penix outplayed Justin Fields.
Did.
And on the other side, if you're Ohio State, I talked about the offensive line. Pass protection was terrible. But they were running downhill. I mean, Master Teague could have gone 250.
He could, and that's one thing they're still doing well, Dunaway. They'll play better teams than Indiana, but they ran the ball well. But I think if I'm an Ohio State fan today, the two things that concern me out of that game is, number one, Michael Penix, who is a blank quarter. You guys fill in the blank. Michael Penix is a
Michael Vick-esque.
Michael Vick. Even Damian groans at that one. Michael
Vick. I think it's just because he's left-handed. Please tell me it's just because he's left-handed.
What did he throw for? 430 yards? He runs all over the field.
I would say progressing B-plus quarterback.
You're right. He's like the left-handed Kellen Mond. That's what he is.
You woke Damian up without.
Man. Left-handed Kellen Mond. Wow. He's better than Kellen Mond.
No. You're way overrated, Michael Penix. He's not better than Kellen Mond. Michael Penix, that away?
Yeah, right. Are we talking about the same Michael Penix?
They were playing the number three team in the country?
Yeah.
Yeah. But did you see him against Penn State?
Yeah, I did.
I saw Kellen Moore do it for 4 years and then almost start for the Dallas Cowboys.
Are we talking Kellen Moore or Kellen Mond?
I said Kellen Mond.
Yeah, Mond is who Damian said.
Mond is better than Michael Penix. Yeah. I'd take Mond right now over Michael Penix.
Probably anyway, so.
Yeah, you would say that now. You wouldn't have said that 3 years ago.
That is correct, Damian. We are in the woods on this one. Let me just say, if you're getting carved up by Michael Penix, you're going to face better quarterbacks. And that's my concern.
Right. Yeah, my takeaway, though, overall was Indiana was better than I expected. Ohio State not as good as we expected.
Yeah, 35-7 at one point, though, right? So a lot of that was maybe you turned off the old switch and then had to turn it back on. And sometimes that is not as easy to do. Stephen and Pelham is next here on the Jocks Roundtable, reacting to a big weekend in college football, looking ahead to rivalry week for some people. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. Quickly, I need your opinion on something, and then I'm going to ask a question. You know, my Steelers are still rolling. Penn State's still rolling downhill. The question about Penn State and Franklin, what's your opinion on Franklin? Now, he's generally been a good recruiter, but this year he's only got four recruits for 21. And the top 10 players in Pennsylvania have gone elsewhere, which has been unheard of for Penn State. So I need your opinion on Franklin and his
You're the Penn State fan. Tell us how you guys feel. What's all your Penn State buddies saying about Franklin?
They're not happy. Of course, we got two quarterbacks. One is a fumbling machine.
And you
one
got zero is quarterbacks. That's your problem. Yeah. You got two guys playing the position, but you don't have a quarterback.
You know, that's what's amazing is how good Sean Clifford was last year. Look, and I know you're missing Journey Brown. I mean, that's a big loss. KJ Hamler's a big loss.
Sure, but everybody loses players. And you had to go back to Sean Clifford. And actually going back to Sean Clifford, he looked a little bit better, but Penn State's still a bad football team.
You know, Penn State fans were worried that James Franklin was going to end up taking maybe a job like USC, and now Penn State fans aren't happy at all with him. I don't know. This is weird. I just think there's some teams, Dunaway, that aren't handling COVID well. I mean, Penn State's got to be one of those teams. Yeah. For them to be defeated this deep into the season just doesn't make any sense.
Worst start in program history at 0-5, and that is saying a lot. They played football a long time right there in the Happiest Valley in Pennsylvania, and now they'll suit up and try to get a win as they go to Ann Arbor to battle a Michigan team coming high off a victory that looked like it won them the Big Ten championship the way they celebrated. It was just a triple overtime win at Rutgers. But Jim Harbaugh was pumped up about it. A W is a W, whether you're eating them on your right hand, your left hand, or in Piscataway, New Jersey. We are off on Thursday, but live with you on Friday. We'll do the pick three on Friday, so make plans to be with us Friday morning, the eve of the Iron Bowl. The only day we'll be off will be Thursday. We're here with you live all week long. More of your phone calls in just a second. Before we get into the Jeremy Pruitt thing, I do want you to hear what Jeremy said after the contest. Questions are involved here so that you can hear it. If you're not familiar with the way the post game is working this year around college football, basically the coach is in front of a computer and a camera, and you're getting Zoom questions basically over the internet. So the reporters are not in the room. And after losing to Auburn Saturday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium, Jeremy's in front of his camera. He's already answered questions from about 4 minutes, and then he gets this sequence of questions here.
Coach, what would you say to any fans or any other reservists who are starting to have questions on the progression and direction of this program?
You need my job, guys. My job's to coach, okay? All right? If you want to ask me a football question, ask me a football question.
Coach, with so many inconsistency on offense, do you still trust Jim Chaney as your offense coordinator for the rest of the season?
I don't know. Did you watch the game? We had more yards than they did. So I don't know that there was inconsistency or not there.
So that was the sequence of questioning there that Tennessee fans are hanging on, saying that they feel like their coach in places. You've seen this all over the weekend, that their coach has sort of lost contact with what's going on with his fan base in the program.
Well, first of all, you know, I've never been a big Jim Chaney fan. I thought he was overrated at Georgia, and I thought it was a bad hire by Tennessee.
I don't know a lot, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think history will tell you I'm going to be right on this one. I would say this, though. You know, they missed two field goals, and if you want to question something about Chaney, it's why you were throwing the ball at all in the second half. Auburn really couldn't stop the run.
Well, McElroy said that. Look, yeah. I am not throwing this football until it's third and long. And the way Eric Gray was running the football, he was gashing Auburn's defense.
You would have
it didn't
thought
make any sense.
Dunaway, had I been Jim Chaney in that game, you would have thought I was a service academy. We would have run every single play until Auburn showed that they could consistently stop it.
Yeah, I didn't think Tennessee's offense was bad at all.
I didn't either.
Look, the turning point was obviously the Smoke Monday pick six.
Yeah, it was a bad throw by Garantano.
There's 2.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. It looked like Tennessee was going to take a 17-13 lead. It's 17-13. The complexion of that game is totally different. But the air was out after Smoke Monday takes it 100 yards.
And that's the criticism of Chaney, Dunaway. In an important situation like that, I don't want the ball in Garantano's hand if I'm a Tennessee fan.
Same thing happened to Alabama, you know, last year. You're in the red zone, you're running the ball, and you throw that pass that bounces off the back of a defender's hand, and it goes 100 yards the other way. Something about coming out of the end zone at Jordan-Hare Stadium, these Auburn players take it to the house. House call, as Gus would like to call it. I agree with you guys. You run the ball until they can't stop you. It's the one thing that seems to be risk-free, right? You're not throwing the ball up for to be intercepted or incomplete. The handoff is the simplest thing in college football, and they were running it between the tackles even. It wasn't even elaborate runs. They were running between the tackles.
Exactly. Lance, if you want to throw it, let him throw some safe stuff. Throw some swing passes, some screens, you know, things that, you know, a shovel pass. Things aren't going to get you beat. Don't let Jared Garantano stand back there and scan the field and throw it over the middle. That's where you get in trouble.
And back to the sensitivity of Jeremy Pruitt. Look, it's an uncomfortable question. I don't think the question's totally out of bounds. You know, people are concerned with the direction of this program right now.
Yeah.
I mean, in year three, this is not where Tennessee needs to be going. It was going in the right direction to end last year.
We've watched it long enough, guys, right? We've watched college football long enough to know that You're going to get these questions when things are going like this at a program. Even James Franklin's going to get these type of questions. You better have an answer ready in your head before you sit down to do an interview on how am I going to answer that. And the way you don't answer it is to be to toss the answer aside and be disconnected like Jeremy was. That doesn't win you anything. He could have said some things there that would have eased over the situation a little bit.
Yeah, but, I mean, Jeremy's Pruitt. You know, I think he's been a very good defensive coordinator. He's been a bad head coach. He's never been good in front of the camera. I mean, that's never been his comfort zone there. He's not
– Even back to the asparagus days.
Yeah, right? I mean, it all started on Tua days. He's not going to win you games there. That's not his thing.
Before we get to Chad's call, our friends at Hero Donuts and Buns are doing something terrific for our local heroes, whether it's a teacher, military personnel, first responders, whatever the situation. If you've got a hero in your life, listen up. We got a way to honor them this holiday season, Lance.
Yeah, thank you, Donaway. Jack's Roundtable and Hero Donuts and Buns right there in Homewood and Railroad Park acknowledge that heroes take many roles and are found in unexpected and expected places. We want to know about the heroes in your life. Again, follow at Hero Donuts on Instagram. Tag a hero. Send a DM. Tell us about it. They will receive a $50 gift card and a dozen donuts each day for the next 25 days. We've got our first nominee today, guys.
All right.
Again, hashtag Heroes of Beham. Tiffany Rouse nominated her friend Hannah Landgrave, and she went on to say, look, my friend Hannah Landgrave is my hero. She's a 26-year-old nurse at UAB, originally from Louisville. She attended Samford. She stayed here after getting a nursing job at UAB. She's been working in the COVID unit at the hospital since the pandemic started. She's single. She lives alone while her family members live in Kentucky. She has to stay isolated since she works with COVID patients every day. Sees the best and worst and still tries to stay positive. Being named the hero of the day won't make everything automatically better, but it could at least help her feel seen and appreciated as she is working day in and day out to fight the virus. So what a friend in Tiffany Rouse to nominate Hannah Landgrave, our first hero here.
Yeah, and thank you, Hannah, for everything you do there. And our friends at Heroes are there to honor the heroes locally during this holiday season. Keep them rolling in. One more time, LT, how do you nominate a hero?
Yeah, it's real simple, Dunaway. Just follow at Hero Donuts right there on Instagram. Tag a hero. Send us a DM. Just tell us a little bit about them. Hashtag Heroes of Beham, and we'll get the nominations out there. And hopefully your hero will get that $50 gift card and a dozen of donuts.
All right. Chad in Gadsden is next with us. Chad, what's up with you this morning, man? How are you?
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I wanted to make a quick point. And I know if we go back, okay, would all of you agree that the only reason that, and this is about Jeremy Pruitt, the only reason that Gus Malzahn is in college football is because of Mitch Mustang. Would you agree with that?
Had a lot to do with
he
it.
He might have gotten there eventually. I don't know. But it certainly got him to the SEC straight out of high school, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I look at Jeremy Pruitt, and he entered college football the same way. I don't remember the specific guys that were being recruited, but he was picked up as a lot of people forget this. He was picked up as director of player development, which is one of those – you know, we're just basically bringing on. I don't even know what their job is. I'm not sure if any of us really know. But it was so that Bama could have that pipeline into Hoover as soon as Saban got there, because Hoover and at the time was a huge hotbed. Pruitt has had success as a coordinator, mm-hmm. but you look at the places where he's been and just the animals that he's had when it comes to, you know, the athletes on the field, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people would have had the same success. I don't know. I feel like we took a high school guy, kind of like with Malzahn. At least Malzahn has had some success in big games. But I think his place is at the high school level, and he was brought on to help with, you know, the relationships and recruiting. And I think without that, I don't think he would be at the college level.
You know, thank you for the call. You know, Dunaway, I think I know why this is the case, but Jeremy Pruitt doesn't get lumped into that same category as Gus Malzahn and Chad Morris when you start criticizing the high school coaches.
You know why?
I think it's because he coaches defense, not offense.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
Yeah, you can't say he's running a high school defense. Everyone says, oh, he's running a high school offense.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's different. You're right.
Yeah. But let me say now, Jeremy Pruitt has been a very successful coordinator. So was Gus Malzahn. So was Chad Morris. So, you know, it's not a knock on Pruitt as a coordinator. I know what the caller's saying there, but Pruitt backed it up. I mean, Pruitt was a very good coordinator.
Well, you know, I just think there's a lot of frustration because when you start the season 1-4 last year, And this was the exact same conversation we were having coming out of September about Pruitt in 2019. But when you go on that run and you have all of this momentum going into this year, and it just seems like it's come off the rails.
It does, and we knew that there would be at least one coach that would have to deal with this because of an SEC entire schedule, right? You don't have the three games against an out-of-conference team where you just pad your victories and your record looks better. And Jeremy Pruitt, I think, is going to be the highest-profile coach that suffers the most from a 10-game-only SEC schedule because it's not getting any easier for him. Before we do our spotlight, big weekend for Devontae. Smitty over in Tuscaloosa became the SEC's all-time receiver when it comes to touchdown receptions, passing Doering and Amari Cooper. Here's Nick Saban on what Smitty means to the Alabama program and the admiration the Alabama coach has for him.
I don't think there's anybody that holds up the core values of the program and reinforces those core values to other players on the team any better than Smitty does. Smitty came back because he wanted to have a great productive year. He wanted to get a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger and improve his draft status. And, you know, I certainly think he's demonstrating that in a really, really positive way.
LT, if he went out last year, was Devontae a first-round pick last year, or do you think he'd have been a second-round guy?
I think he would have been a first-round guy.
Oh, wow.
I do. Now, the difference, though, you look at Devontae would have been back half of the first round, probably anywhere from 25 to 32. And now you start to look. I mean, he could be your first wide receiver off the board. I mean, most people still think it's going to be Ja'Marr Chase, who decided to opt out this year.
I've been paying very close attention to that particular subject because the team I cheer for in the NFL needs receivers and will get a very high pick. Got a little less high yesterday with that Texans win, but it's still going to be a pretty high pick. And most of the mocks, like Lance said, it's either Chase or Devontae Smith. At the top, some have Jalen Waddle, but most of the opinion I've seen is either Chase or Devontae Smith. So he probably, by playing at Alabama, took himself from the back end of the first round to the top end of the first round.
Well, Dunaway, and if you just look at Mel Kiper's big board, his top 25, five are wide receivers.
Yeah,
and Devontae Smith is that fourth wide receiver right now. He's behind Jalen Waddle. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel. Watching Rashad Bateman at Minnesota this year, I've been underwhelmed. Yeah. They get a win on against Purdue on Friday night. But, you know, I think Waddle and Smith both go in front of Bateman. I don't know if they go in front of Ja'Marr Chase or not, but this could actually hurt Ja'Marr Chase being out this year and watching what Devontae's actually doing on the field.
Because he looks a lot more physical than his frame would expect. He's more physical than you expect him to be with the way he looks. He's bulked up a little bit. He's strong and got really strong hands.
Look, by virtue of the fact of how many players Alabama puts in the NFL, they're naturally going to have some busts. Not everybody is going to work out. But I feel like at the top end of the big names that have gone, receiver has seemed to be the safest draft out of Alabama. Would you guys agree with that?
Julio, Ridley,
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, Ruggs and Judy looked the part.
Ruggs and Judy are still very early, but I mean, I'm talking now top-end guys.
There hasn't been a first-round wide receiver, and those are the only five, I think, that we're talking about, but there hasn't been a bust yet.
Yeah,
and all these guys have been really good.
So the top-end guys, that actually feels like the safest one, Dunaway. You've had some misses at running back, obviously. You know, you've had some linebackers that didn't work out, some defensive backs that didn't work out, but really the top-end receivers, those guys have worked.
Yeah, but when you're throwing in 4 to 6 first-round draft picks a year, you're going to have some guys don't make it. So it's been really impressive lately. You just turn on the Sunday ticket, and it's one out. You know, there's Mika intercepting a pass. Oh, there's Derrick Henry walking off a overtime win for the Titans. Oh, there's Josh Jacobs running, between the tackles, helping the Raiders do this and that. It's just they're all over the place. They're all over the place now with great success in the NFL. With that in mind, let's do our Wickles Pickles spotlight of the weekend. As we head to this, let me apologize. I have said Shane Bolden all morning long. It is Slade Bolden. Shade Bolden, Shane Bolden, I assume his ankles are fine. Shane Bolden was one of the better second basemen on the shirt and cap, a little league team known as the Astros in Alabaster growing up. Shout out, Shane. I hope you finally kissed a girl. I know it was a big topic when we were 11 years old. But Shane, I hope you're doing well. I hope your ankles are fine. Slade Bolden is questionable this weekend for Alabama. We'll hear more in the Nick Saban news conference. Hit it, Damian.
Wickles Pickles Spotlight. College football's best and worst.
Hey, and Wickles Wickedly Delicious Pickles made using that 90-year-old family recipe. It's family company packed proudly right here in Alabama and the perfect addition to your home tailgate. For more information, WicklesPickles.com or look for their great product in your local supermarket.
All right, start us off, Brownie. Your best of the weekend.
You know, my best of the weekend, my best of the weekend had to be the Pat Fitzgerald blowback to Joey Galloway. The only hesitation here is I hate it when coaches say, we don't pay attention to the media, it's all noise, yada, 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 until they find that one little piece of the media that they can use to fire their team up, then they suddenly pay attention to it. But for him to blow back on Joey Galloway that way, call him out for calling them the fighting Reese Davises. I've never been a big Galloway fan, so I think that's why I liked it so
much. Yeah, Galloway to me is one of the worst on TV, and I loved him calling him out. I thought it was incredible, but, you know, my best of the year, or at least my stock rising, would be Northwestern just in general. What they were able to do, Dunaway, to that Wisconsin offense. And look, Wisconsin's offense was untested. It had only been out for a couple of games, but Graham Mertz, a kid that had yet to turn the football over, turns it over four times. They force five total turnovers. Wisconsin's 3 of 16 on third down, and they hold them to 7 points. In today's college football, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great story, but give me the point spread, Ohio State, Northwestern, and who you taking?
Ohio State right now, Northwestern. We're going neutral site, Indianapolis. Yeah. Ohio State is going to be a 19-point favorite, maybe even 21, 19 to 21, and I'm probably laying it. Man. I am laying it.
Yeah.
Stuff to improve, and then all of a sudden you're down.
Yeah. I love this team.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, all the pop and circumstance. And by the way, when they play a team that is actually legitimate, you're going to be like, 19 and a half, and I'll lay that. No problem. In a championship game.
Yeah, I really believe Alabama would be 28 right now. 24 to 28 over Northwestern, neutral site.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me. I'd take Alabama all day long against that team. For me, Northwestern, my big takeaway early on in that game, they have the best actors in the world at tight end. Getting that first drive, they were flopping, getting flags on that first drive to get second shots at the end zone there. My best of the weekend, I'm going to go with Cincinnati. Listen, I don't think Cincinnati belongs. Shut up, Damian. Shut up.
What?
I see
what
happened? The expression on his face. Because what? We have a conversation. I don't give enough love to Cincinnati or BYU. We had that discussion Saturday morning. Listen, that team was down to UCF. They were down a lot. I thought that UCF was poised to run them out of the building down in Orlando, and they fought back. And time again, they had to make plays, and Desmond Ritter made the plays. If he needed 11, he got 13. If he needed 15, he got 17. It was a gutsy performance from Cincinnati.
Could not figure out what either team was doing at the end of the game, though, Dunaway.
Oh, it was amazing.
I don't know what either team was doing. So
I love the fact I was catching four with Central Florida, and you're talking about having a complete cardiac on that final drive.
Yeah, for those that had already flipped over to the Auburn game on ESPNU, I had them both on. UCF's down three. Cincinnati gets a first and goal situation. UCF's only got the one timeout. Their only hope is to let Cincinnati score, which they try to do on first down. Then the Cincinnati back wisely falls down on the one, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't go in. He's got a walk-in. Doesn't go in. So Central Florida burns their timeout. Then Cincinnati starts trying to score, and Central Florida starts trying to stop them.
Yeah,
I could not figure it out.
And Dunaway, I don't know if you saw this, but they were talking about this chart that Cincinnati had on their sideline, and they're trying to figure out, you know, probability. What are we supposed to do in this situation?
Nobody knew.
But when you started to do the math, all Cincinnati had to do, especially on the fourth down there, was to go from shotgun, which they did, and take a couple of steps backwards, but they were still trying to score. The fortunate thing for Central Florida backers is it was a terrible snap.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But don't worry, neither team knew what to do at the end there.
Worst of the weekend for you, Brownie.
The worst of the weekend for me is Oklahoma State. And I'll tell you, the actual worst is that they call that thing Bedlam. There's nothing Bedlam about that. Let's quit calling this a rivalry. This is not a rivalry. It doesn't matter in college football. It's not Bedlam. There's nothing Bedlam about it. It's Alabama-Kentucky of the Big 12.
I actually looked up the definition of Bedlam, and it perfectly describes what that is, Brown. Bedlam is a scenario of, I think, chaos and unpredictability.
There's no unpredictability about it.
No, I got the definition. Here it is. Yeah. Uproar and confusion is what Bedlam is.
Well, that describes Mike Gundy.
Uproar and confusion. Oklahoma State's confused that this is a rivalry, so it perfectly describes
it.
It is a terrible. I mean, it's not even a rivalry. I when we start talking great rivalries, nobody lists Oklahoma State.
Well, yeah, I got burned on this. I played Oklahoma State because I thought it was the better defense. And look, we're in an era now where better offense beats better defense.
What about your worst of the weekend, LT?
Gus Malzahn on fourth down, kicking that field goal.
You got to get points there, Lance.
Yeah, you know, you're up 10. Look, I mean, it works out. Anders Carlson has turned into a major weapon.
Kicker.
He's only missed one field goal the entire year. He's 11 of 12 this year, and he kicks, you know, his season-high 50-yarder right in that situation. Dunaway, I didn't know about what you thought about it. I thought they would ultimately punt the way the defense was playing. I mean, it's not like you're going to trust Harris and Bailey to go down and get you two scores. I thought the safe play was to punt it. They kick the field goal. They go up 13. They end up covering. Win the game. It's not a problem. But, you know, if that kick gets blocked – you know, that's going to be something that Gus would have taken some criticism on.
If that kick gets blocked, they still have to get another score, right? Onside kick and another score.
Yeah, but I'm just saying if you get a scoop and score, I mean, go back to Clemson-Miami. I mean, you know, that game goes from, you know, 27-17 to 27-24.
That's a quick score rather than having to drive the field for a score, I guess is what
you're saying. Yeah, I'm just saying you punt in that situation. I really don't see Tennessee going 80 yards, you know, worst case scenario.
My worst of the weekend is the whole Florida State Clemson situation. Whatever's shaking out, it's a bad look to be arguing about playing a game, not playing a game, but to have somebody on site and hours before the kick and not playing the game, that is a bad look all the way around. And then everything that's coming out after that is not good for college football. So that's our best and worst of the weekend, brought to you by our friends at Wickles Pickles. Let's do four downs. It is brought to you by Vulcan Tires. Vulcan Tires in four locations, Lance.
Four great locations. Dunaway, Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, Trustful. Locally owned and operated business by Birmingham guys. For more information, VulcanTireAndAuto.com. Vulcan Tire and Automotive, making tires great again.
First down.
If I asked you, better chance of repeating as world champions, the Kansas City Chiefs or the L.A. Lakers?
You know, just it seems like it happens more in the NBA than it does in the NFL. I don't have numbers to back that up, but it feels like it does. Yeah, I mean, what do we have back-to-back in the NFL? It's happened very few, hasn't it?
We haven't had a back-to-back champion in the NFL since 2003, 2004.
Yeah, so I think Dunaway,
15 years.
I'm going to go with the Lake Show. Just because it happens more in the NBA.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, some solid moves changing locker rooms there in Los Angeles, Clippers, the Lakers over the weekend. But I tell you, you watch that Chiefs team, and they had one, you know, death by paper cut 16-play drive from their own seven. And then after the Raiders fought, took the lead with a minute 30 left, up three, they asked Andy Reid, they said, did you think about playing for a field goal? He said, a minute 38 left, I got Patrick Mahomes. No, we thought about a touchdown. They scored in seven plays.
Yeah, Mahomes can erase a lot of mistakes, but that defense puts you in some spots where you've got to have him do that.
Yeah, look, and I just don't see the Chiefs as dominant this year as they were last year in spots. For whatever reason, they've just struggled. Look, and Vegas is a really good team. I think they've kind of flown under the radar. I think Vegas is definitely a playoff team. But you go back, you look at the Carolina game, the Charger game, just not as dominant. And you look at the moves with Harrell and Gasol coming over. They're going to be better defensively. The West, Golden State will not be a player again. Obviously, with Klay Thompson being down. So I agree with you guys. I would go Lakers.
Second down.
Who lost more momentum in the Heisman race this past Saturday, Mac Jones or Justin Fields?
That's a tough one there.
I mean, I know Kyle Trask did the numbers thing, but that was not a dominating performance by his team either, and I think it's a team award now as much as it's anything else.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that sadly Mac probably lost more ground.
Okay, I'm going to go opposite on that because here's why, Dunaway. Follow me on this logic. I think more voters stopped to watch Ohio State and Indiana because of the nature of that game. Everybody knew Alabama was going to run Kentucky. So more voters are probably – and it was SEC Network. This was, you know, main Fox for Ohio State, Indiana. So I think more voters probably watched that game. And if you just look at Mac Jones' numbers and it's 63-3, you probably thought he got pulled – at halftime.
Yeah.
You watch Ohio State, Indiana, and you saw the horrible mistakes Justin Fields made.
Well, that
I think it was probably worse for him.
Yeah, I think it was worse for Fields, Dunaway. I mean, Mac Jones had the one interception, but you look at Fields, he turns it over three times. And without Master Teague, I don't know if they win that game. I think if it's 100% on the shoulders of Fields.
But the conversation has changed on Mac Jones. The conversation on Alabama has changed to where everyone is saying Devontae and Najee are better Heisman candidates, even though it's a quarterback award now. We know that. But they're like, Najee Harris should be getting more talk about the Heisman Trophy. Devontae Smith should be getting more conversation about the Heisman Trophy. That's where the conversation about Alabama's talent has shifted. It's shifted away from Mac to the other two players who are making plays at the end of Mac's handoffs and throws, and that's not the case with Justin Fields or Kyle Trask.
Yeah, here's what we do in the Heisman now. You got the preseason favorite who you spend all of normally September and October picking apart and finding somebody else. Then you find that guy, and when you get to November, you start picking him apart and find somebody else. That's the way the Heisman seems to work lately. It's the guy that has the good November that came out of nowhere in September and October that wins it.
Yeah, and this year it's going to be somebody winning it in December instead of November.
Right, right. This is our normal November here.
Third down.
What was more impressive Saturday, Oklahoma in a win or Indiana in a loss?
Probably Oklahoma in a win. I mean, I know I was critical of Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy earlier, but Oklahoma State's a better team than Indiana, I think.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I think Oklahoma is playing better football right now than they were at the beginning of the year, so they're back into the conversation. Indiana closed the gap, had a chance there late after they were down 35-7, so a lot of credit there. But, you know, when it comes to losing games, I'll give, you know, almost just as much credit to Mississippi State and to Arkansas and to other teams who fought their guts out and lost games over the weekend. But Indiana was impressive. Their coach was emotional afterwards. But I'm going to go with Oklahoma getting the W.
Yeah, I know a lot of people say there are no quality losses, but I think for Tom Allen and his squad, I think to be down 28 in a one-possession game, you know, where this game was last year, it wasn't even close. Indiana got run off the field. So to me, I was more impressed Indiana in the loss. I thought they were going to lose this game by 28 to 35 points.
Yeah, but what does that get you when it's all said and done? A Coke and a smile, and that's
it,
right?
Well, it gets you more respect. Hey, this is what we're building. You saw Tom Allen in the locker room after the game. He said, I'm not happy that we lost this game at all, but you guys, you laid it out there, and I just think they're building something. I don't think, you know, I don't know if Indiana's got staying power. Who knows?
Yeah. You know what? It might get them any other year. This is the worst year to do it, Dunaway. Any other year, it might have gotten them the Rose Bowl. Because Ohio State would have been onto the playoffs somewhere in the semifinals, but the Rose Bowl is one of the hosts this year.
Yeah.
So Indiana would even get shut out of that.
I think Oklahoma's a very young team this year, transition year, and that may be what they're building now, what gets them to a playoff in 2021.
Fourth down.
More surprising number this weekend, Alabama minus the 24.5 in the Iron Bowl that we talked about a couple of times, or Notre Dame only 4.5 over North Carolina.
That's in Chapel Hill, right, for whatever it's worth. I was surprised the Alabama number was that big. Again, I thought it'd be 17 or 18, so I guess I'd say that.
I'm more surprised at Notre Dame and North Carolina. I've seen North Carolina struggle at times, and I'm dialed in 2:30. 2:30 Friday afternoon on ABC for Notre Dame and North Carolina. I guess there's a chance the Tar Heels can pull the upset here, so I'll be watching, because any upset you get once we start doing playoff committee stuff, that's monumental. So I'll be watching 2:30 on Friday for a possible upset. I was more surprised by that number.
Yeah, I was too. I would have listed Alabama Auburn probably 23. 24.5 might be a little high, but on the other side, Dunaway, I thought Notre Dame would be right at a touchdown. I thought they'd be minus 7. So minus 4.5, it's a very interesting number, and it tells me that North Carolina's got a really good shot here.
All right, that's our four downs. It's brought to you by our friends at Vulcan Tires.
Hey, take your vehicle to Vulcan Tire and Automotive. They take care of your vehicle, so your vehicle takes care of you. Four great locations, Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, Trustful, Vulcan Tire and Automotive, making tires great again.